Good morning.
Good morning.
This morning I'd like to talk on section 220. And if we have enough time, I'd like to also talk on 221. let me read 220. One day, Dogen instructed, the distinction between being brilliant or dull applies only when thorough aspiration has not yet been aroused. When a person falls from a horse, various thoughts arise before he hits the ground. When something occurs which is so serious that one's body may be damaged or one's life may be lost, no one will fail to put all his intellect to work. On such occasions, whether brilliant or dull, anyone will think and try to figure out what is best to do. Therefore, if you think you will die tonight or tomorrow, excuse me, or that you are confronting a dreadful situation, encourage your aspiration and you will not fail to attain enlightenment. A person who seems superficially dull but has a sincere aspiration will attain enlightenment more quickly than one who is clever in a worldly sense. Although he could not recite even a single verse, Chodapantaka, one of the disciples of the Buddha, gained enlightenment during one summer practice period because he had earnest aspiration. We are only alive now. Only if we learn the Buddha Dharma, earnestly wishing to attain enlightenment, will we be able to do so before dying. In this section, Dogen Zenji again discuss about importance of determination, and in order to allow a really decisive determination, we need to see, not only see as a objective truth, but see, really see the impermanence that we may die tonight or tomorrow. And this is what he has been saying so many times in this text. And here he said, whether we are brilliant or not so brilliant, or dull, or foolish, if we have a decisive, strong determination and really focus on practice, we can attain so-called enlightenment. The word Dogen uses Satori. The basic reason why he put emphasis on this point, you can attain enlightenment or you can attain the way. In other places, he's used the expression tokudo instead of satori, attain enlightenment. But this do or way is also a translation, Chinese translation of Sanskrit word awakening. So tokudo, attain the way, is also attain awakening. the reason why Dogen put emphasis on this, you know, possibility of attaining awakening. If we really, sincerely, wholeheartedly practice, is as I, because he often talk about this, I often talk about this too. At the time of Dogen in Japan, people believed that they lived in the age of last Dharma. That means, you know, in the kind of a Buddhist history, philosophy, there are three ages. And first 500 years after Buddha's death, people study Dharma, practice Buddhist teachings, and attain enlightenment. And second age, for 1,000 years, there is a teaching, and there are people who study Dharma and practice, and yet no one attain enlightenment. And at the final Dharma, only teaching remains. No one practice and no one attain enlightenment. That was the reason, you know, in Japan at that time, in the 13th century, Pure Land Buddhism was very popular. In Pure Land, they taught that no practice works. We cannot attain enlightenment by practicing using this body and mind, because we are living in the very degenerate age. So only thing we can do is to trust the vow, original vow of Amitabha Buddha, that he saved or accept all living beings to his Buddha land if they if people have that faith in his vow. So he said, people believe this world is too bad to practice and to attain enlightenment. So only hope is to rely on or trust Amitabha's so-called other power and be born in the Buddha land, pure land, there. And there, because that is a Buddha land, it's better place to practice. So then when we are born in the Amitabha's pure land in the West, then we can practice. That was the basic teaching of Pure Land Buddhism. But Dogen Zenji was against that idea. He said those three ages are only within human beings. It's not something objective there, outside. And if we really sincerely allow body, mind, and wholeheartedly practice, we are already in the time of Shobo or True Dharma, the first 500 years. That is probably another reason he put emphasis on Shobo or True Dharma, and true aspiration and practice. So he want to say, if we really allow that sincere body mind and wholeheartedly practice, enlightenment is there. That is another reason he put emphasis on practice and enlightenment are one. That means enlightenment is something, is not something very far, something which is not attainable. But when we sincerely practice, enlightenment is already there. That is his, in a sense, his faith or his teaching. So then, even though he discussed in this section, you know, if we practice sincerely, we can attain enlightenment. This enlightenment is not something, you know, very far. Or as, you know, we usually think people, not people, but Shakyamuni became Buddha when he attained enlightenment and he entered Nirvana. So enlightenment or awakening and Nirvana is only possible by special people like Buddha. It's not available for us. I think that is a common idea, especially in this, you know, degenerate age. So I'd like to discuss then what is awakening, nirvana, and enlightenment, or satori. But before that, maybe it's helpful to a little bit talk about Chundapantaka. Chundapantaka is one of the Buddha's disciples. Chuda means small or little, and Pantaka means a road or roadside. And he has an elder brother whose name was Mahapantaka. Maha means big. So there is a big Pantaka and small little Pantaka. And Pantaka means road. That means they were born on the road or roadside. And there are two kind of stories why they were born on the road. But I don't have time to discuss about, talk about the stories. But the and both Mahapantaka and Chudapantaka are one of the 16 Arahat. So they are kind of a very respectable people. But in the beginning, the elder brother, Mahapantaka, became a Buddhist monk first. And he was a very brilliant person. And the younger brother, Chudapantaka, became a monk following his elder brother. But this Chudapantaka is not brilliant at all. And his elder brother tried to teach him one verse, a poem. But even after 3 months, he couldn't memorize even the verse. So after the 3 months means a summer practice period, So his elder brother almost get angry and ask him to leave because he couldn't even memorize one verse. There's no possibility he could be a monk. In order to be a monk, you know, they have to learn the 250 Vinaya precept and memorize Buddha's teaching. So Chudapantaka was very sad, and he was standing probably at the gate of the monastery. Then Shakyamuni Buddha passed by and asked, "What are you doing here?" And he probably talked about the story. Then the different version of the story. Shakyamuni Buddha gave him a job to clean, give him a cloth, a cleaning cloth, and ask him to clean the sandals of the monks. That is one version. Another version is he gave him broom to clean the floor. Anyway, something to make things clear and clean. In the version, when Buddha gave the broom, I'm not sure in the Sanskrit version, but in Chinese version, broom has a compound, two characters. And it said, when he memorized the first part, he cannot remember the second part. And when he memorized the second part, he forget already the first part. And it took him a long time. It said it took him 6 years, actually. So it's not one practice period. That one practice period Dogen mentioned is the time he failed to memorize even one verse. So it took him a long time. But finally he found this, you know, cleaning is a cleaning the dust of the caused by three poisonous mind by practicing eightfold correct path. And finally he attained enlightenment. That was one version of the story. Another version is somehow when he cleaned the, I think, sandals. Buddha told him that be mindful of the, be mindful of the purity without dirty, and he focus on this purity. And somehow he entered a very deep samadhi. And finally he, so it's not after 6 years, it's pretty soon he attained so-called enlightenment. That is a story. So the story of this person, Chudapantaka, means the awakening or enlightenment in Buddhism is not something available only for superior people like Shakyamuni or Shariputra or Mahakashapa, but even people who are intellectually not superior can also attain. So this is, you know, great encouragement to us. And another kind of important or interesting point is previous sentence. It said, a person who seems superficially dull but has a sincere aspiration will attain enlightenment more quickly than one who is clever in a worldly sense. This expression, clever in a worldly sense, is a translation of expression, sechi ben so. Sechi is a worldly, sechi is world, se is world, chi is wisdom. And ben is knowledge or distinction. And so is clear. So such Benso is the person who have a very clear knowledge about how world works, how things in the world works. So very kind of a capable, brilliant and capable people. And this Seti Benso is considered to be one of the eight difficulties to encounter with Buddha Dharma. Others are something like being in hell or the realm of hungry ghost or animal or the heaven where, where people live in an extremely comfortable situation because you know they have no problems, they have no chance to awake to the reality of impermanence or suffering, the first truth. So those are difficult places to encounter with Dharma. And clever in the worldly sense is one of them. I really like that this point. And you know, as I said, when I started to practice Atantaiji after graduation from the university, I tried only read in Zen Monkey, and I like that part. And I try not to be a capable person in the worldly sense. Actually, I was not. You know, since I was a teenager, but the only thing I did was reading books. So I had no knowledge or skill to work in the world. So I was not really a handy person, not a practical person. And I feel sorry about that. But when I read this, you know, I feel, you know, I'm okay. So in a sense, to be good for nothing person, in a worldly sense, is a good thing. Although people don't usually don't respect such people. So to be capable might be a how can I say? Yeah. So I think that is another interesting point in this section. So, you know, Buddhist Sangha is not a collection of superior, brilliant, capable people, but we need people like Chulapantaka. Or, of course, we need some brilliant, capable people, but we also need, you know, people who only interested in, you know, quietly sitting or studying Dharma instead of really, you know, good at working with the world. We also need such people, but such people are not necessarily superior in terms of Dharma. Because I think so-called enlightenment is not something called for our intellection, our, how can I say, good head or brain, but really settle down who we are. And that is a point I'd like to discuss. What is enlightenment, so-called? And on Saturday, when I gave a talk at Unitarian Church, I introduced one section of Sthanipata, the oldest scripture in the history of Buddhism. and Buddha's teaching about nirvana, because this is a Pali text. The word is not nirvana, Sanskrit word, but nibbana. But let me read a few sentences. This is a question and answer. This is a question from a person whose name was Dotaka, and Shakyamuni gave the answer. Dotaka's question was, I so much want to hear you speak. Please, Master, Teacher, explain to me, can a student of your teachings, find the calm of cessation? This calm of cessation is nibbana for himself. So can a student of your teachings find nirvana for himself? Then Buddha said, any student of my teaching, any, not only superior great people, but any student of my teaching who is eager, intelligent and aware here and now, not sometime in the future, but here and now, can find the calm of cessation for himself. So any student of Buddha can find a nibbana for oneself. So at least in the early Buddhism, nibbana is not something very far, but nibbana is at hand, here and now, and for anyone. Then Dotaka asked, I can see now that there is in this world a man who has nothing, a Brahmin, a wanderer. I bow down and honor you, sir, the eye that sees everything. So Dotaka praised Buddha and asked, please, man of Shakya, free me from confusion. So he asked, please free me, please give me liberation. Then Buddha said, it is not in my practice to free anyone from confusion, said the Buddha. When you have understood the most valuable teachings, then you yourself will cross this ocean. That means even Buddha cannot free someone else. So Buddha's job is not make someone to be free, but each one of us needs to practice. And this practice makes or allow us to be free from confusion or delusion. So when we practice, freedom or liberation is there. Even Buddha cannot give us the freedom or liberation. You know, here practice is really important. And whether we are brilliant or not is not a matter. Have pity on me, Brahmin sir, said Dotaka. Please teach me the way of detachment. The way of detachment is the way to be free from clinging or ego attachment, so that I can know it as it is, so that I can live in this life in the peace and independence. I think this independence is not relying on something, depend on something. That is as free as the air in space. AI in space doesn't rely on something, but it's there and free and flexible. Then Dotaka asked again, not asked. It can only bring me joy to hear about an ultimate peace, which, when a mindful person understands it, release his hold on the world, so we can be released. Our hold on the world, attachment, clinging to the world. If we are mindful. Then finally, Buddha said, in every direction, above, below, around, and within, there are things you know and recognize. So there are things we think we are center of the world, and at 10 directions of our world, there are so many things, and we know and recognize what are these. And when you realize that these are the things which tie you to the world, if you really know all of these things are things which tie you to the world, that means object of our clinging, attachment. If we really know that, then you can lose the thirst of craving. This, if you know that, you can be free, is very basis of wisdom. If we have wisdom, we can be free. If we really see, we are free. We are released from that clinging, whether it's true or not. That is the nature of wisdom in Buddhism. When we really clearly see, so this clearly, or you know, in the Heart Sutra, clearly Avalokiteshvara clearly see the emptiness of five skandhas. When we really see the emptiness of five skandhas, we are free from five skandhas. So this clearly see the truth or reality of things as they are, is wisdom and is the source of liberation. So if we see, you know, all things around us are the object of our clinging, and when we see that, we clearly see that, then we can be released from our craving, the desire for constant becoming. So we are free from our desire also. So, you know, this is Nirvana, according to the oldest sutra in Buddhism. So Nirvana is, you know, is there when we see, clearly see the nature of things. And later in Buddhism, it said, as the Heart Sutra, clearly see the emptiness of all those things. It's an object of our attachment. But by seeing all those things are empty, that means only collection of five skandhas. So we cannot really cling to. Then we are liberated. So this point is really consistent in almost all Buddhist traditions from the very old time of Buddhism. So when we are free from our clinging, then Nirvana is there. And what Dogen is saying here is same thing. Dogen is saying about enlightenment or Satori here is the same thing. So Satori or enlightenment is something like if we gain it, we become Buddha. or we become enlightened, the master, and receive so-called Inca. That is a kind of a social thing, social conventional things. But actual enlightenment or nirvana is in our actual real practice, real life, is when we open our hand, become free from clinging. We, unrest our attachment to things at hand, I mean in front of us. Then there is nirvana. So nirvana is a moment by moment thing. It's not, how can I say, once we attain nirvana or enlightenment or satori, we are free from desire rest of our life or entire future. But it's a moment by moment thing. Then this moment, we open our hand and don't grasp, then enlightenment is there, nirvana is there, and freedom is there. But next moment, we again grasp, then it's completely lost. So our practice is really right now, right here, whether we can open our hand at this moment or not. We cannot accumulate our practice, Yes.
Explain a little bit more about that, not accumulation of the practice.
Well, Uchamura always said, enlightenment or satori is not something, or our practice is not something we can, deposit to the bank and withdraw later. But then we practice right now and open our hand, satori is there. But next moment, that satori is already gone. So we have to open our hand moment by moment at this moment. And Uchamura also used the analogy of breathing. We cannot breathe for the future. We can't, breathing. We can't accumulate or save breathing and use it later, but we have to breathe each moment, no matter how many times, billions of times we have to breathe at this moment. And according to Uchamuro's, enlightenment is the same thing. Whether we we open our hand each moment, this moment or not, is all. I cannot say I opened my hand yesterday. It doesn't work. We have to do this today or this moment. And next, I'd like to talk on Dogen's teaching about enlightenment from Shobo Genzo Daigo. Daigo is great enlightenment. Dai is great or big, and go is satori. As I often say, the Japanese word or Japanese or Chinese characters which can be translated into English word enlightenment are at least three or more, and this is one of them. Other two are kaku. And another one is show. When Dogen said enlightenment and
practice and enlightenment are one. He used this show. Show means evidence or proof. And show is a kind of a pair with shoe. Shoe and show is one word. Fendogen then said, practice and enlightenment are one. His expression is shoe show. Shoe and show are one. So show is a result of practice. As a common sense, we practice because, and as a result of this practice, we attain something, some result. And that is so, and that is a so-called enlightenment or satori. Please.
Shu is practice.
Shu is practice. And in the case of kaku, kaku literally means awakening, wake up, wake. And the kaku is a position of sleeping or dreaming, or mu, yume, dreaming. Dreaming is like a, you know, delusion. We don't see the real thing. We create some kind of fantasy in our mind. And usually we live in that way, created by our mind. But satori, in case of kaku, awakening, is we stop dreaming and really see the reality. That is another meaning of satori. And
satori is used for all of
these? Yes, all three characters are read in Japanese satori.
Okay.
Please.
So the sense of kaku is waking up from dreaming as opposed to waking up from sleeping.
We dream when we sleep. So here, sleeping and dreaming is the same thing. So, and kaku is waking up.
It has that quality. In dreams, there's all this fantasy activity, whereas there is a type of sleep that there's no dreaming occurring. So it's getting out of this fantasy. So that's the sense of kaku.
Sleep without dream, I don't think is kaku.
The kaku is waking.
Yes. Wake from dream.
And this character, the one here, this is dreaming or
you
sleeping.
Same. No, this is dreaming. Sleeping is mean. Dreaming. But kaku is the opposition of mu, yume, dream, not sleep. And this, in the case of go, the opposition is mei. Mei or mayoi in Japanese. And this mei is something like, you know, this part looks like an intersection. And when we are clear where we want to go, what is our goal, our destination, we don't need to, we know where we should go. But when we are not sure where we are going, which is the best way to get that place, you know, we hesitate, we cannot go anywhere, we cannot make any choice, or we make many mistaken choices, bad choices. That is the condition of mayoi, because of lack of clear understanding, we make many mistakes and we suffer. So we are lost. That is this mei means. And go is opposition of that condition. Clearly see where we go and how we can go there. Please.
A one-word translation of may is confusion?
Yes, confusion, delusion. So when this word is used, that is opposition of may. And this is how can I say, in comparing with these two, this is more, a little bit intellectual.
Go.
From you know, in the modern Japanese philosopher translate English or Western word reason, they use this word go, or we say go say, nature of go. So it has some intellectual aspect or wisdom. Actually, this part of this kanji is mind, and right hand part of this kanji is self. So we know who we are, and we know where we are going. That is what this realization means. We are free from, you know, delusive, confused condition. And now we know who we are and what we do. That is the idea of go. And when Dogen Zenji used this expression daigo, this dai or big or maha in Sanskrit means absolute. It's not a kind of a comparison between with may or confusion. Please.
Would it be fair to say that may, you don't know where you're going? But in
go,
you do know where you're going.
Right. We know who we are and who and where we need to go and how we can
go. That's the same thing, right. Where we are and where we need to go.
Right. This is a translation by Kazu Tanahashi in the book Beyond Thinking. This is the very beginning of this chapter. A great, in this translation, great enlightenment, or Daigo. The great way of the Buddhas, the great way of the Buddhas has been transmitted with intimate attention. The work of the ancestors has been unfolded evenly and broadly. That means all penetrated, not particular part of the world. Thus, great enlightenment or Daigo is actualized, and beyond the enlightenment is the decisive way. Beyond the enlightenment is a translation of who go. Who is saying who with Hushiryo. You know, Shiryo, Hushiryo, Hushiryo. Who is, Hushiryo is not thinking. So who is not, no Satori, no realization. And here Dogen used this expression, no Satori, in a very positive way, meaning no Satori is beyond Satori. So Daigo is absolute Satori, and no Satori is even being free from Satori. And he used the who in same word, such as who A is understanding. and who is not understanding, or no understanding, and no understanding is being free from understanding, that is beyond understanding. That means, you know, when we learn how to drive a car, we have to first study, you know, the name of the parts of the car and how they work, and we have to memorize all the traffic rules. And when we are beginner, we have to think, memorize and think what I should do, you know, in this condition or situation. So we have to think. And unless we have correct understanding of those things, we cannot drive safely. But when you are an experienced driver, you can drive safely without thinking of that. Even you forget about those rules, and yet you can drive without, you know, violating the rules. That is the meaning of hu'e, not understanding. Beyond understanding, free from understanding, yet no, how can I say, violation of the reality. So then here Dogen Zen used this no enlightenment in a very, in that way, this positive way. So great enlightenment is actualized, and beyond enlightenment is, or hugo is, the decisive way, means in each moment, even though we are free from enlightenment, how we do things, how we practice, how we behave, how we live together with all beings, is really decisive, and Buddha can do it, or Buddha ancestors. And in this way, enlightenment is realized and filled with. Enlightenment disappears in the practice of letting go. So even this great enlightenment disappeared within our practice of letting go. So clinging to or grasping enlightenment is the most difficult hindrance. If we think I attain enlightenment and I grasp it, and I think I am enlightened, then that is the best, deepest, and most difficult hindrance to be free from. Because we think we are free. That is the problem. So great enlightenment is enlightenment even being free from enlightenment. This is the everyday activity of Buddha. Buddha ancestors, everyday activity. So it's not a matter of when we attain Buddhahood in the future, but our day-to-day activity should be the manifestation of this great realization, beyond, so in a sense, beyond realization. So this is everyday activity. Enlightenment taken up activates the 12 hours. 12 hours means 24 hours. In the ancient China and Japan, one day was divided into 12 hours instead of 24. So 12 hours means entire day. Enlightenment taken up means really practiced. Enlightenment as practice is activated by the 12 hours of the day. And enlightenment hard away, hard, H-U-R-L, hard away. taken up is kind of grasped, and hard away is, you know, ungrasped enlightenment, is activated by the 12 hours of the day. Furthermore, leaping beyond the mechanism of time, there is fooling with a mud ball and fooling with spirit. Fooling with a mud ball and with spirit means, you know, our day-to-day, ordinary, not so important, not so special things. That is where this great enlightenment is activated. So, to me, what Dogen is saying here and what Buddha said in Sutanipata is the same thing. It should be activated and manifested within this, within our activity in our daily lives. And he, in this chapter, he quotes one koan story. Jin Chuao, Shi Jun, great master Baozi of Xuan Monastery in Jin Chuao, was a Dharma heir of Dongshan, or Tozan Ryokai. Once a monk asked him, this person is in Japanese Kegon Kyujo, and I think this is a person who said in Chijishingi, he was a work leader, and someone asked, work leader told, mentioned this side of people work, do something, and that this side of people work for another thing. And one monk asked, what about Manjushri? And the work leader said something, I forget exactly, but Manjushri doesn't sit upright in the center, so how he can work in either side or something like that, that person. Anyway, once a monk asked him, what happens when a greatly enlightened person is a person of Daigo, becomes deluded. What happens when a greatly enlightened person becomes deluded? Then Jin Chuao said, a broken mirror no longer reflects images. Fallen flowers hardly ever climb up the tree. This is his answer. And Dogen Zenji praised his answer very much. I don't have enough time to fully discuss what this means. But Dogen's comment on this question, on this koan, is the so-called greatly enlightened person has not been enlightened from the beginning, nor has received enlightenment from somewhere else. So in this case, this great enlightened person or great enlightenment is not something the person has from the beginningless beginning, or also not he could attain, he attained or gained from somewhere else, but he himself at this moment. Great enlightenment is not something one encounters when one is old, after having worked for a long time as an ordinary monk in a communal place, that means a monastery. This is also means we cannot accumulate the great enlightenment. It is a matter of moment by moment thing. And it does not emerge by pulling it out from oneself. It's not something inside of oneself and pulling it out. Nevertheless, one is greatly enlightened. So he negates all the kind of theoretical possibility of what enlightenment means or is. And yet he said one is greatly enlightened. That means the way we are, the way the reality of our life is itself great realization. Well, I'd like to talk another thing, so please try to read this chapter. This is really interesting and important about what enlightenment means. So when he discussed about gaining enlightenment, you know, when we discuss, talk about our Zazen, you know, in our Zazen we have no enlightenment. But here Dogen said we can attain enlightenment. So there's some kind of a superficial contradiction. You know, that's why I'm talking about what then enlightenment means when Dogen used this word. And so this enlightenment Dogen is talking about, it is not something like a certificate to become a Roshi or the master. No. Unfortunately. I'm sorry. But it's a moment by moment thing. And it's really ordinary and actual reality of our life, whether we are awakened to the reality and we can open our hand of grasping or clinging or not each moment. And another thing I would like to introduce is Daichi Zenji's Junichi Hogo. I'm not sure. Do you know Daichi Zenji? Daichi is Daichi was originally ordained by one of Dogen Zenji's disciples, whose name was Kangan Gi-in, who went to China and stayed there for 11 years after Dogen Zenji's death, and came back to Japan and founded a big temple in Kyushu. The name of the temple was Daijiji. And actually, Daijiji was the temple Sawaki Roshi lived as a teacher, not the abbot, but as a kind of a teacher for not too long, maybe 3 or 4 years. 3 or 4 years, I think. Anyway, this Daichi was so originally ordained by this person, Kangan Gi-in, but Kangan Gi-in died before Daichi became adult. So Daichi visited Keizan, and he practiced with Keizan, probably before he went to China. Daichi also went to China and practiced there. And after he came back from China, he received Dharma transmission from Keizan's disciple, whose name was Meiho Sotetsu. So Daichi is a sixth generation after Dogen Zenji. And when he became a master, he went back to Kyushu and founded a few temples. And one of them is Shogoji. And Shogoji is where, you know, the international dojo is established by Narasaki Koroshi and Katagiri Ranin Roshi. And this person, Daichi, his personal name is Sokei. Daichi is his go, and his personal name is Sokei. Was very famous for his Chinese poems. And Sawaki Roshi really respected Daichi Zenji, and Sawaki Roshi gave attention on Daichi Zenji's poems. Daichi Zen didn't wrote many poems, but not much books or text. But only two or three short, very short hogo or dharma word remains today, and this is one of them. That title of this dharma word is Juniji Hogo, and again this Juniji is 12 hours. Hogo is dharma word, and this has something to do with what Dogen said about, you know, the great enlightenment is activated by the 12 hours. And Daichi explains concretely how the great enlightenment manifests through 12 hours. And this is my translation in this book, Soto Zen. I translated this title, Juniji, as Hogo, as on practicing throughout the day. Juniji, 12 hours literally, not literally, but actually means 24 hours. And he explained how we should, this is a teaching for lay people, lay students, when they visited and stay at I think, his temples. And he described how lay people should practice each hour of throughout the days. And first he said, the day begins at the hour of the tiger. 12 hours has its name of the 12 animals. So the hour of the tiger means 3 in the morning. So at his temple, they wake up at 3 in the morning. Get up when you hear the sound of the morning bell and drum, and put on your kesa or robe and sit zazen until the middle of the hour of the rabbit. That is 6 a.m. So it seems they sat 3 hours in row. If this is too long for you, ring the bell at the middle of the hour of the tiger, that is 4 a.m., and continue. Thank you for listening. That is 6 a.m. Spend the hour of the tiger free from the karma of life and death. So, according to Daichi, this sitting itself is being free from the karma of life and death, means samsara. And at the end of the hour of the rabbit, that is 6 a.m., have gruel for breakfast. At this point, give up the mind of zazen. He said, when you have breakfast, give up the mind of zazen. Concentrate on eating gruel. Reflecting on the 6 parameters, tasting the 6 flavors. 6 flavors is bitter, sour, sweet, spicy, salty, and simple. And chanting the 10 benefits of eating gruel. This is a kind of ceremony for Oryoki meal. Do not think of anything good or anything evil. When you have breakfast, just attend free to the gruel with both body and mind, and do not be concerned with zazen or any other activities. This is called clarifying the time of gruel and realizing the mind of gruel. So if we really wholeheartedly, mindfully eat when in the time, at the time of eating, we said, clarify the time of Gruel and realizing the mind of Gruel. And at this very time, you have a pure realization of the mind of the Buddha ancestors. This pure realization is same word, Satori. So if we focus on eating and just eat, even forget about sitting or Zazen, is Satori of the mind of Buddha ancestors. And at the hour of the dragon, this is 7 a.m., if it is still dark, practice as if it were the hour of the rabbit, and sit a little more. And it seems they had a morning service after breakfast. The point of sutra chanting, is just to hold the sutra book with both hands and to chant wholeheartedly, forgetting both Zazen and the meal. When you chant, you should forget about Zazen and the meal. Do not pay attention to anything else. This is called realizing and clarifying the chanting of the sutras. At that very time, the karma of life and death is exhausted. You know, when the karma of life and death is exhausted, that is nirvana. And you will enter the rank of the Buddha ancestor. When you practice with this attitude, we are entering the rank of the Buddha ancestors. And he continues, according to him, even sleeping, the same thing. He said, do not think of sleeping as a trifling thing compared to Zazen or Sutra chanting. We usually do. Zazen or service is more important than sleeping. But without sleeping, we cannot do that then, without, you know, falling into sleep. So sleeping is really important. The Buddha's sleeping posture is as follows. So he explained how Buddha slept. Lie down on your right side and do not untie the belt of your robe. Do not think of the Buddha Dharma. Do not think of Buddha Dharma when you sleep. Much less of things having to do with life and death. Just sleep. Then the karma of life and death is exhausted. So this is a nirvana in sleeping. And your body and mind are nothing but the Buddha ancestors. Anyway, this is not really difficult text, so you can just read and understand. So this is what enlightenment means, I think, when Dogen is talking about attaining enlightenment. It's not a big deal. It's really, you know, moment by moment thing. If we really focus on what we are doing and forget about everything else, that means we are really be mindful right now, right here. Then we are free from, you know, life and death. That is nirvana. We are in nirvana. And that is enlightenment. That is a manifestation of this great enlightenment or Satori. And in order to experience or practice this kind of Satori, we don't need a brilliant intellection. We need only, as Dogen said, determination and seeing impermanence and focus on
right now, right here, that's all, because we may die even next moment. We just focus on this moment. That is Satori, according to Dogen. And this is kind of very unusual understanding of Satori. You know, usually people think Satori is something psychological, something, you know, special, a fantastic experience of our mind while we are sitting. But that is not great enlightenment, at least according to Dogen. And at least in Dogen's lineage, you know, our practice moment by moment is enlightenment, nothing else. And I, as I said in the beginning, I want to finish 2:21, and this is not difficult at all. 2:21, page 100. One evening, Dogen instructed, at a Zen monastery in China, sometimes they sift the wheat and rice, etc., grains, throwing away the bad grains and keeping the good ones to cook. A certain Zen master admonished in a bus, though you split my head into 7 pieces, do not winnow the rice. What he meant was that monks shouldn't fuss about arranging fine meals. Rather, they should eat whatever is available. When it is fine, they should eat it as it is. And when it is poor, they should eat it without dislike. Get rid of your hunger and support your life. With the faithful donations from patrons, or pure food from temple belongings, alone and devote yourself to the practice of the way. Do not choose good from bad on the basis of taste. Now each of you in my assembly should also have this attitude. I don't think this is difficult to understand. And, you know, in the coming up summer practice period, we are going to study Tenzo Kyokun, or instruction for Tenzo. This is about, in Tenzo Kyokun, Dogen then give the same instruction, same teaching. You know, we should be equal. We should keep the equal attitude without discrimination toward any food when we receive the meal. Or in the case of Tenzo, whether we have fine food or coarse ingredient, Tenzo should work with equal diligent attitude. So I think we talk about this, we study about this attitude without discrimination during the summer practice period. But I think also this attitude, we don't make discrimination, that means we don't discuss or think this is good and that is bad, or this is better than that. And we cling to this one, and we try to that one, keep that one away. You know, this attitude creates or makes our life samsara. Sometimes we are so happy because we have a good thing, and sometimes we are so miserable because we don't have good thing. And we chase after something we want, or we escape from something we don't want, or we want to change our condition
and that creates samsara. So, you know, this is the same as what Buddha said. If we really see the food can be the object of clinging, and we really see it, then we are free from that clinging. Because whether fine, delicious, expensive food we eat, or whether we eat just ordinary, plain food, you know, we can practice. Important point is to keep our body in a good shape to practice. So if we determined that practice or work for the sake of Dharma, or work for fulfill our vow is most important thing in our life, then whether to have to eat fine food or coarse food is not so important. When we see that thing, that, you know, and we have a determination for what we are living, what is most important in our life, you know, we can be free from, of course it's nice to have a delicious food, and we need some patience to eat not so delicious food, but it is okay if we can do what is most important in our life. And that is another way, you know, this great enlightenment can be manifest within our daily lives. So, you know, food is really day-to-day things, and we don't pay too much attention, and because we are not so careful about food and our attitude toward food, you know, we easily, you know, move this way or that way, you know, when we have a delicious food, we become happy, and when we have ordinary food, we are not so happy, and it's okay when we have a delicious food, we can just enjoy it. But if we think to have a good food, a delicious food, a gourmet food is meaning of our life, a purpose of our life, it's a problem. And if we work to eat fancy food, that is too much. Please.
I would like to come back and speak a little bit about the accumulation.
Okay.
Or the non-accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I kind of understand about it. It's not possible, the accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
But how that fits with the karma, how does fit the non-accumulation with the karma? Do we accumulate karma? What is karma in that non-accumulation? How does it work?
Karma is activity, actions. In Buddhism, karma is actions we do with our intention, our will. Our activity without intention is not called karma. Because of this intention and our activity, there are some the activity, the action has some influence to others and to other self. what is the point? Accumulation. It said in Yogacara teaching, it said all our karma, that means all our experiences, is stored within the deepest layer of consciousness called Araya consciousness. So in a sense, it's there. And yet it said the seeds within the Araya consciousness is moment by moment, arise and perish. Arise and perish. So it said our consciousness is like a waterfall. And the shape of the waterfall looks, you know, same. But the water itself is always new, always fresh. That is the point that we can change our karma, our karmic tendency. So it seems, you know, things accumulated and stored, and yet actual reality, it's moment by moment. So it, how can I say? What is the point of your question?
Is that because there is no accumulation, and then how there is accumulation of karma, or is not accumulation of karma?
There is a continuation.
But there's a waterfall.
It's a continuation. There's a continuation, but the water, which is really, you know, falling, is moment by moment. Within Zazen, we let go of our thought and we do nothing based on our seeds stored in our Araya consciousness. So in that sense, we are free from karma. But the seeds are still there. So when, you know, next moment we again grasp something, then, you know, the karma start to work again. That's why we cannot accumulate our practice.
That is the reason for why karma is empty.
Yeah, karma is empty. Yeah, but enlightenment is also empty.
Yes.
And moment by moment. Okay, any please?
Yes, once I read a list of 10 or 12 definitions of enlightenment, which was sort of helpful. And so now when you were talking about Dogen's enlightenment, I was thinking, well, in the one direction, I was thinking of those Yogacara texts and the way they talk about enlightenment. And then I was thinking about mindfulness practice, which I was thinking about recently, which, you know, it's like spreading across the country. People are studying mindfulness without any idea of Buddhism at all. I just noticed this word comparison comes up in my mind. But I wanted to ask you about Dogen's enlightenment, mindfulness practice, and whatever you call, you know, that thing that I was trying to study when I was studying Yogacara. Can you say anything about That's not a regular question. I understand that. I can try to make it clearer if I need to.
Well, I really don't know what so-called mindful practice is, because I have no experience. I have no karma with it.
Okay.
So mindful practice is like insight meditation?
It's, you know, these words get confusing because they say insight meditation.
Mm.
But when I was teaching mindfulness in the stress reduction program, I saw there was a part that was about calming down and there was a part that was about insight. And most of the actual teaching was encouraging people to stay present with the sensations in their body, or to stay present with, you know, to follow sounds, or to, it's like we would give them these various tools, encouraging them to just be in the present. It seemed like it was maybe a psychological version of Zazen, but I keep wondering about it.
To me, it's kind of different. I think that's also a part of Buddhism. In certain traditions, and that kind of meditation practice can be, I can say, more popular and, in a sense, authentic. Dogen's idea or teaching or practice of enlightenment is kind of very unique, even within Zen tradition. You know, enlightenment or satori is not something psychological. It's not something psychological, something happened, some experience we have during Zazen. It's, in a sense, very unique and not so common. And I cannot say this is real to only to real enlightenment, and other tradition is all wrong or false or fake. I cannot say, because I have no experience. But only thing I can say is this is what I have been practicing. So I cannot really compare. If you practice both, then you can compare within your experience. But that is your experience. I'm not sure whether it's really, you know, true in Dogen and you know, other practice. So in that sense, we need to create our own version of practice. Actually, what I'm practicing and what I'm talking is my understanding and my experience of Dogen's teaching, transmitted through my teacher. So even I'm not sure whether my understanding of Dogen is really, really correct, really what Dogen wanted to say or not. But anyway, this is my version of Dogen and my version of Buddhist practice. So I think each one of us needs to really experience and practice and understand. But unless we are really careful, we create something kind of a superficial, shallow version. That's why it's important to practice with good teacher and for a long time.